Hello, and welcome once again to a MANCAD British Academy of Audiology podcast. As I'm sure you know by now, MANCAD stands for Manchester Centre for Audiology and Deafness, and we're located at the University of Manchester in the UK. I'm Gabrielle Saunders. I'm a senior research fellow at MANCAD, and I moderate our podcasts. We address topics that are pertinent to the practice of audiology. We hope they have relevance not only to audiologists and researchers, but really anyone interested in hearing and hearing loss. We record a new podcast each month. They last 20 to 30 minutes. And each month we put the podcast along with a transcript on the MANCAD University of Manchester web pages. So on to today, Kevin Munro is going to be discussing the curious incidents of the pandemic in our lifetime, COVID-19 and the auditory system. You might have heard it's a topic that's been gaining quite a lot of publicity recently. So we're taking this opportunity to spend some time clarifying what the research data indicate. Now, Kevin has a multitude of roles and titles, including he's the Ewing Professor of Audiology, he's a director of the Manchester Centre for Audiology and Deafness, and he's the Deputy Director of the NIHR Manchester Biomedical Research Centre and Theme Lead for Hearing Health. Kevin, do you want to add something about your research interests?
Yeah, well, thanks for the invite, Gabby. I guess my research covers a continuum from trying to prevent hearing loss, looking at assessment and diagnostic procedures, through to interventions and outcome. A lot of my work previously has been focused on kids, but I also do some adult work. And I suppose you could describe it as being translational and applied research. And by way of example, one of the biggest studies we're doing right now is called FAMIS, funded by the Health Technology Assessment Programme, and that's looking at interventions to increase the uptake and the use of hearing aids in adults.
Great, thank you. All right, so now let's go on to the business of today, and that is discussing what the data show about COVID-19 and the audiovestibular system. And as I said, we're going to talk about the findings of a systematic review that Ibrahim Al-Mufarrij and Kevin conducted and that they've recently published. But before we talk about the results, first of all, tell me, what was your motivation for carrying out the review?
Yeah, well, I guess just over a year ago when the pandemic started, I didn't know very much about coronaviruses at all. I mean, I didn't realise even then that they account for about 20% of the common colds that we get over winter. But I was certainly aware that some viruses can cause hearing loss. And there's actually, over the last year, a good review that I've referred to frequently by Brandon Cohen that was published in Trends in Hearing about 5 years ago. It gives a good overview of the different viruses, what part of the ear has been damaged. And we also know that about 10 or 20 per 100,000 adults each year report a sudden hearing loss, usually single-sided. And in some of them, it's explained by a virus. So we're certainly aware that viruses can damage the ear. I started to receive inquiries from the public saying that they thought their ear was being damaged and they had COVID. That made me sit up and take notice. And at the same time, a number of professionals, I can think, for example, of a GP that contacted me to say that he thought he was seeing more patients complaining of hearing loss and tinnitus. So it was that combination that made me think we should sit up and take notice and do something about it. So that was the motivation for this work, Gabby.
Okay. And I know that what you did was a systematic review. So could you just tell listeners what a systematic review is, and particularly how it differs from a standard literature review?
Yes. So, I mean, a literature review is where you search and you evaluate studies on a particular topic. A systematic review is a particular process. It's almost like a recipe that you follow. It's formulaic and it guides you how to do a review, starting with how to really clearly identify the research question you want to answer by reviewing studies that are published in the literature, how to assess the quality of the individual articles, how to assess the quality of the overall evidence. And because it's somewhat formulaic and you're following pretty much a recipe, I suppose, it means it should be reproducible if other people go off and try to do the same thing. So it's trying to minimise the risk of bias. And often these systematic reviews have what's called a meta-analysis. So if there's numerical data there, there's a way of pulling the numbers that come from a whole collection of studies to give you the best estimate. And that's one thing that we've included, to get the best estimate of audiovestibular symptoms. And it's an approach that's used by Cochrane. The Cochrane Library uses systematic reviews. NICE use this approach when they're evaluating the evidence. And just a great skill to have, and great, I would think, for hearing health professionals to have as well, because it's a bit like riding a bike. Once you understand how to use the recipe, you can then apply it to different research questions. And not only is it a good skill to have, you know, they're very valuable when you can give a good summary of the literature that's unbiased. And it doesn't take a lot of resources. So, you know, I've often said to people who want to get involved in research, just collaborate with someone who's already done systematic reviews and they've got skill, and they will guide you through it. And it's a good way to move forward. So I don't know what you think. I mean, you've done systematic reviews, right?
I have not.
No. But you think they're a good idea and a useful skill for hearing professionals to have? Yeah.
No, I do. And I think it's a really good way of getting a rigorous evaluation of what's out there. So there is no doubt of their value. All right, so drum roll. In a couple of sentences, what did the review show?
Okay, well, we've actually conducted two reviews. Let me just mention in passing, we did our first review last April or May time, so very early on in the pandemic. And at that time, we identified about 7 articles, not great quality, but we were still somewhat amazed to find that they were already talking about potential hearing problems and tinnitus and balance problems. So at the end of last year, November, December time, so I should just mention Ibrahim again and make sure he gets the credit, for he did a lot of the donkey work for this. We did a new systematic review. We identified 56 articles that was looking at a link between COVID-19, or the virus that causes COVID-19, and problems with the audio vestibular system. And about half of these studies were individual case reports, and the other half were observational studies, so a cross-section of the population who had COVID. In a nutshell, the best estimate from all of these studies was that 7% of people with COVID were reporting hearing loss. About double that were reporting tinnitus, and again about 7% reporting a vertigo. So that was our best estimate based on what other people have already published, Gabby.
Okay, so there's some indication that there's some association there. So if we dig into it a bit more, were there any factors that seem specifically to be associated with the balance problems? And by that I mean, it's like, was there anything to do with people's age or severity of COVID, or I don't know, presence of other medical conditions?
Yeah, so we were looking specifically at that. I guess, in a word, no. Interestingly, last night I was listening to a free online seminar from the Royal Society about long COVID. These people who, you know, weeks or months after having the acute episode, were still experiencing fatigue or shortness of breath. And one of the conclusions from last night was that actually there doesn't seem to be a pattern. Sometimes it's the people who weren't especially ill that were managed at home. And actually sometimes people who appeared to be asymptomatic then reported problems further down the road and had tested positive for COVID. So it didn't seem to be related to age. It didn't seem to be related to severity of the symptoms. And I think I would say the same. When we look at all these studies, there's nothing in particular that jumps out, except people with comorbidities, which is kind of well known with COVID, right? People with other health problems are more likely. That's about the only thing that I would say stands out just now.
And was it any particular comorbid condition, or just generally being less healthy?
Yeah, well, one of the limitations actually of the articles is sometimes they don't specify what the comorbidities are. They just list them and say, you know, X percent had one comorbidity or two or three. Diabetes cropped up quite a lot, but I can't be absolutely sure because it wasn't always explicit.
Huh. So presumably there must be something ultimately. We just haven't measured it or noted it or something.
One would think so, right? Yeah. Yes.
interesting. So one advantage of a systematic review, as you mentioned before, is that you rate the quality of the studies in your review. So what can you tell us about this as regards the review that you did? What are some of the limitations of the current studies? What was the quality like? And can we be confident in the overall findings?
Yes, well, the quality of... So let me just make this clear. When we're doing the systematic review, we're trying to address a very specific question. So looking at the quality of the evidence to answer our question. It could be there's a study where we say, you know, the quality to answer our question isn't great. It doesn't mean it's reflecting badly on the study, because maybe their aim was slightly different from our one. There was certainly an improvement in quality between the studies we identified last April, May time and what we identified this time. I would say it moved up from being poor quality, where we couldn't have an awful lot of confidence in the findings, to moderate level. The limitations would be, well, there's often limitations in the design or the methodology of the studies. So, for example, most studies use self-report. So there could be pros and cons to that. It could be there's bias because of difficulty with recall. It could be that the person asking the questions has a vested interest in knowing about, for example, hearing problems. So we have to be careful how we interpret that. Not many of the studies have a control group. And if I give you an example, let's say 5% of people say, I've now got tinnitus, or my tinnitus is worse since having COVID-19. Without a control group, you don't know what that might be in the general population, right? So we're living through a pandemic, and we've all, I'm sure, had some mental, emotional stress and anxiety, particularly in the early days when we didn't know what was going to happen. So for without a control group, for all you know, maybe 5% of the general population who never tested positive for COVID might be reporting these symptoms. There are a lot of case studies, so single cases, and they tend to be adults with a sudden sensory neural hearing loss. And I mentioned earlier, each year we expect to see about 10 to 20 adults per 100,000 that report a sudden hearing loss. So the question is it just a coincidence? Are the numbers really going to be higher than they were in previous years? Or is it just a reflection that because so many people happen to have COVID-19, it just so happens that they had it at the time? And there are some studies that I would say have been relatively poorly executed. So they might have had a control study, but it wasn't well matched. So if I just give you a hypothetical example, it might be a study where the people with COVID are age 50 and they're compared to people without COVID, but they're age 20 and got perfect hearing threshold. So there's that sort of issue. And also the general reporting, something that's not always clear, are these symptoms that just occurred transiently, or are they persisting? Did they occur during the acute phase? Did they come on at a later date? And there are some studies that we've included, and we mentioned a word of caution in the article, that we're just not 100% sure that they're measuring a change in hearing or tinnitus. It's just possible they're simply asking people if they've got hearing loss or tinnitus. So we've tried to be very careful about that. But for all of these reasons, you know, we just have to tread fairly cautiously. So our review was the first one with a meta-analysis. So it's our first stab at estimating these numbers. I guess it's likely to be refined over time, as you know, just the nature of science. But maybe the last thing I can say on this is there are wide confidence intervals around our estimate. So for hearing loss, we have 7%, but the 95% confidence interval, so the range where we say the true value is between these values, went from something like 2% up to 15%. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the actual number moves around a bit. It's somewhere inside what's quite a wide range, really.
Yeah, so it sounds like this is part of the problem with sort of doing research during a pandemic, that, you know, one can't do a controlled, fully controlled study. And that really one needs to do this sort of step back and plan it and run the study.
With all science. Yeah. I agree with you.
Sorry.
No, you go ahead, Gabby.
I was going to say, as I understand it, there is such a study planned at Manchester, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we're just embarking on one, and you're absolutely right. It's a study where we will be comparing individuals who had COVID, actually individuals with quite severe symptoms, so people who were originally hospitalized with people who were hospitalized but didn't have COVID. So we're trying to match them as closely as possible, because just being very ill and being in hospital can lead to all sorts of health problems that may or may not be related to the fact that you're admitted because you had SARS-CoV-2 that resulted in COVID-19. So we're going to do a careful comparison between these two groups.
Okay, yeah. So if there is indeed a link between COVID and hearing loss, there must be some mechanism. Have people postulated what those mechanisms are yet? Has the virus might affect the auditory system?
Yeah, yes. But it's not clear. So I can give you some examples. I mean, the kind of the denominator when people have COVID-19 is that the virus has entered the cells using a particular type of receptor called an ACE2 receptor. And we've come to learn over time that the virus can affect many parts of the body, because this receptor, this kind of door into the cell that the virus creeps in and then starts reproducing, is present throughout the body. It's not at all clear to me that we have many of these ACE2 receptors in the inner ear. I actually contacted people who are better informed about this than me. So one of them was Jonathan, so let me give him his full title, Professor Jonathan Gale, who's a director at the Ear Institute. And we had a discussion by email. And there's a relative paucity of evidence that we have these receptors in the inner ear. We might have, and if we do, that could explain why the virus might directly damage the ear. But, you know, it may be indirect damage because we hear a lot about inflammation in the immune system, don't we? We're all getting to know, understand the immune system more. And we hear about this cytokine storm where the body has this very strong stress response. And we know that that can damage the body and potentially could damage the ear. We've also been hearing a lot about the effect it has on the vascular system, making blood more viscous, more thrombosis, more clots, and we have some narrow blood vessels, capillaries in the inner ear. But, and some people have been in hospital and in intensive care. And as I said earlier, there's lots of things that can happen to you when you're seriously ill and unwell, including medications that potentially could be ototoxic. And also, at least in the UK, we have not been familiar at wearing face masks up until this last year. And I think sometimes just with wearing face masks, it interferes with people's ability to communicate. And I do wonder if there are some people who, you know, have a hearing loss that they didn't recognize until people are wearing face masks, and then they realize that they're having these problems. And also mentioned earlier about the sort of stress and anxiety and lack of sleep we're going through, and this vicious spiral that I think Ross Coles was one of the original people I used to hear talk about this. So this link with tinnitus and causing stress and anxiety and not sleeping. Because I don't know about you. Actually, you're maybe not old enough to have had the vaccine yet, but I know when I got mine, I kind of came out with a spring in my step. So, you know, even subconsciously, it clearly was weighing on me a bit that there was this virus going around. So, you know, there's a whole range of things. And we really need to be able to untangle them and find out what are the ones that are responsible for people reporting hearing loss and tinnitus and vertigo. Yeah.
Yeah, complicated. So you've referred a lot to people being seriously ill and in hospital. For those people who either have had asymptomatic COVID or COVID that didn't end up in hospital, you've talked about this risk of 7%. So is it something we should be worried about?
Well, the number, I should say, probably includes as many people who had, I guess, what we'd call mild COVID that weren't in hospital. So it doesn't seem to just be the people who were severely affected and in hospital. So I guess I wouldn't use the word worried, but I do think there's a need to be concerned and for us to take it seriously. Because, you know, we've already said we know that some viruses can cause hearing loss for some people. We know that SARS-CoV-2 that causes COVID-19 can affect a wide range of organs and systems in the body. We know that there's, since we published our most recent systematic review a couple of weeks ago, we've had about 150 people contact us not all of them, but the majority thinking their symptoms are associated with COVID. We've got these numbers from our systematic review, and we certainly know the impact that hearing loss can have on people's life, right, and their ability to communicate with ease and how it can affect their quality of life. So let me turn it around. I think it would be wrong not to take it seriously, given all that background, right? And I think we should take it seriously while we wait for better quality evidence to come along. So it feels like, I've used this analogy before, we're just in the foothills of this expedition and we've got a lot more adventuring to do yet. But I do think we should be taking it seriously. I mean, what do you think, looking at it more from the outside?
What do I think? Yeah, I mean, I think it's something we need to look into. I mean, seriously, from the perspective of researchers working on it, trying to understand it in the medical profession, I suppose the other thing we don't know is if these effects, these auditory system effects, are transient.
Well, I certainly know that for at least for some people, it is transient. So we can't say for all. I mean, I'm kind of intrigued by these adults that have this sudden onset sensory neural hearing loss. Was that going to happen anyway? I mean, the ones that are reported, there is a close association that they felt unwell, they had COVID, and like they woke up the next day, for example, and they'd lost their hearing in 1 year. So I guess it is called Occam's razor, isn't it? The most simple explanation is the most obvious one, that if they had a virus and they're unwell and they lost their hearing, they probably are related, but we can't say for sure. And we won't be able to say for sure until we look at the numbers and see, or on a sort of time series analysis, has it increased during the pandemic? Because you expect, if it is because of the virus, there should be a significant increase if you look at the number of people in the world that have had the virus, right? So time will tell. There are people who have a sudden loss of hearing in 1 year, and that should always be considered a medical emergency, because the treatment is steroids to reduce swelling and inflammation. And if it's to have any chance of working at all and have a good outcome, you need to start that treatment as soon as possible. So you shouldn't delay if there's a sudden loss of hearing and unexpected loss of hearing in 1 year.
That is a good message. Okay, so just thinking about this risk in terms of the public perception of the topic. As I said earlier, we know that there's been a lot of press coverage about it. Do you think the press is generally sending the right message about this to readers?
Yes, actually. So I would be interested in your view on this, but I'll tell you my thoughts first of all. I personally have found it a little bit overwhelming that there's been so much interest. It seems like we've just touched the right nerve at the right time, because there's been it increases all the time, right? But the last time I looked, there was over 350 news stories. So that was in newspapers, online, live interviews I've done on radio and TV. And I'm always slightly anxious, because you don't want to scaremonger or be provoked into saying something totally outrageous or misleading or stupid. On the other hand, if you're so guarded, you come across as rather boring and don't have anything interesting to say. So I do think we have an important role in dissemination. And I would like to think that we as researchers have pretty much got the balance right. When I look at the press coverage, I think mostly they've got it right. But of course, the press are trying to sell papers and they're trying to put a particular spin on it. I mean, it hasn't been as bad as, I think it was last year, there was an article in a newspaper about the work we were doing in Manchester. And the headline was, "Professor on the verge of curing deafness." And that really frightened me. And I was a bit embarrassed thinking, if people really think I'm going around saying that. So I've not seen that this time around. So on average, I think they've probably got the balance right. But it's quite difficult when you're sort of closely associated with something. I mean, what do you think?
To be honest, I have not been reading all of the different things. So I think my opinion is that it's really important the press come to credible scientists for input on whatever it is. Because, as you say, the information needs to get disseminated. And it needs to be disseminated in a balanced way. And so going to researchers is hopefully the way to do that.
Yeah. I think that's a nice summary. I agree with you.
Okay, so then coming on to sort of the next part of this then is for audiologists. What is the need for audiologists to manage the situation? What is there something that they should do if a patient reports hearing loss following COVID? Is there anything they can do if it's not sudden hearing loss? Are we at the point where asking about COVID needs to become a routine history-taking question for audiologists?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, I suppose the take-home message would be, we're in the foothills, we've still got a lot to learn, but we should take this seriously because of the potential impact it can have on individuals. And services need to know, you know, are there likely to be a big increase in the number of referrals coming through? I would imagine that many audiologists right now will be asking about COVID-19, or I suspect that new patients will be telling them, you know, I've had this change and it happened when I had COVID-19. So I think that information is likely to be made available. If it isn't, I think it is something I would be asking about. And I think we'd need to be clear, did the person test positive for COVID on their PCR test, or do they just have a suspicion that it's related to COVID? So I think it does make sense, because that's how we spot trends, right? Talking to people who might have the symptoms, and before we do fancy studies, we're looking for trends. So I think I would be asking about it, noting it, trying to be clear, did the person definitely have COVID, and when did the symptoms occur? Was it while they had the acute phase, or was it sometime afterwards? And maybe the final thing is, if there are these people with a sudden hearing loss, you know, they shouldn't be hanging around. They'd be encouraging them to seek medical help as quick as they can.
Yeah, and is there anything else, if somebody, not being that situation, but presumably tinnitus is tinnitus and you would use the same intervention. Mild hearing loss is mild hearing loss, regardless of its etiology, and they would have
Yeah, exactly. I would just manage the symptoms appropriately as we do right now.
Okay, very useful. Do you have any other final comments or things that you want to say about this very important topic?
Not really. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how things develop over time. It's always tricky when you're at the very beginning of something and there are not many studies. Sometimes the results conflict, and you know, we always find over time when the dust settles, the weight of evidence will point us in one direction or the other. So I would think the more people who are investigating this and conducting, you know, good quality studies with carefully matched controls, the sooner we'll get to the bottom of this, and the better the service we can provide to patients, so we would know, you know, what sort of assessment procedures should we be carrying out, what part of the ear might be damaged, how severe might it be, and how should it be managed.
Okay, thank you. Well, that was really insightful, very interesting to hear. Hopefully everybody listening will have learned something now about systematic reviews in general, which I think is really important. So thank you, Kevin, for sharing your time and thoughts with us.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
Sorry, to the listeners, there'll be a transcript of this, and we'll include the reference that Kevin mentioned and also a reference to the systematic review. If you've got follow-up questions or feedback or want to share ideas about future topics, please send me an email. Again, my email is available on the website. I hope you enjoyed this discussion and you come back to hear our next podcast, and I'll get the word out when the next is available. So thank you, everybody.